Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 5, delivered on September 2, 2015. The title of this lecture is Ratio Analysis.
Today, Ratio Analysis. I'm going to put up, I think it's already on ReggieNet, but then again, ReggieNet is a little bit speculative, and I'll put it up on the Pearson Learning Management System. My own little sheet of ratios that you can kind of carry around with you. It's not all the ratios that are talked about in the book, but this is actually the one that I had for years of my own when I did financial analysis. And it's got a lot of these ratios in here, but this one has a few extras in it. Interestingly enough, I had forgotten they bring up the one that I used to call the burn ratio. They call it the cash ratio. And I have to be a little careful because I might use a term, an older term, for a ratio that's around these days. Bear with me one second. I want to get the computer awake here so I can do something with in just a minute or two. Okay. Hey, it worked. Something that's been kind of an obsession in these early courses, about any book you look at, they'll give you these problems that look like, well, what in the world are they trying to do here? How do I get to the answer to this? And quite honestly, the answer is not nearly as difficult as it might look. I do hope I have a marker that, nope. Not a marker there. Let's see this marker. Sort of. Okay. We're good. Let's say, all right. Let's say net margin. Now, net margin, whenever you hear margin, you're going to probably be talking about the thing in the bottom being your sales, your revenue. So net margin would be your net income divided by your sales, okay? Gross margin is your gross income divided by your sales. Operating margin is your operating income divided by your sales. I think I said it wrong, one of those, but you know what I mean. When you see margin, the bottom is going to be sales, and the top is probably going to give you a clue as to what the other number is on the top part. Okay, no big thing about that. Okay, but suppose that they said, okay, now, I'm going to write this correctly, the way the book does the first time. Book value of equity. Just look at the financial statement and look at what the total shareholders' equity is. That's all you ever do. When they say book value, look at the financial statement. Now, if they say market value of equity, that's going to be your market cap. In other words, what the market says. Okay? But the book value of equity. So, return on equity, ROE, is going to be your book value of equity denominator. Net income divided by book value of equity. I know, right? Does this suck? Does anyone have a marker that doesn't suck? Give me a second here. Wait, hold still. Check this out. Okay. Let me do it again. Return on equity is book value of equity divided by, well, that's actually on the bottom, net income divided by, I'm getting ahead of myself here. In other words, the net income is the money that belongs to the shareholders. Book value of equity is a measure of how much money they've got in the game. Book is how much money you have in the game. Net is how much you've gotten off that money you got in the game. So when I do ROE, I'm saying, what was your percent return? What did you pull? So now you're going to hear me. I got to warn you about this. When I say, I'll probably not say book value of equity. You'll hear me say book equity. And if I mean market value of equity, I'll probably say market equity. So know that in the shorthand that we actually use in the real world, we don't say these long terms like the book does, but I've got to make sure that you know the long term, because I think they do that even on the test. Okay. ROA is net income over everything that's in the game, over total assets. Notice something here. The less equity I have, in other words, the more of my total assets is debt, the more a given net income magnifies ROE. Let me say that again. If I've got a pot, most of my company's capital structure is equity, then net income divided by a pile of owner's money isn't going to get me a good ROE. But if I have only a small amount of equity compared to the debt in the corporation uses to finance its operations, that same net equity would be divided by a small, that same net income would be divided by a smaller number, so you would have a bigger return on equity. So in other words, using more debt in your capital structure and less stock, selling stock, will, of by mathematical definition, cause your return on the owner's equity to go up. What it does to market value, or a market ROE, that's a little more speculative. The market will decide that on its own. But there you go. These two, I don't know, this one is so big in Financial News Network and those kinds of easy, simplistic analyses. ROE is always talked about. And they're talking about book ROE. When they say ROE, I know they're talking about book. More important would probably be your market ROE. But one way or the other, ROE and ROA are kind of like big things when you're talking financial ratios. We all look at them. We all want to know what kind of returns are we getting on our money here. a few more that are important. Then I'm going to get down to this algebra trick thing that's so popular with questions in the book and in other books too. Just a couple. The margins, I told you, you've got your gross operating and net margins. And all of those, you just take the whichever one it is, like gross margin, you just take gross income divided by your net income. Or I'm sorry, net income divided by gross income. So in other words, that one would be net income over gross. Do I have like a mental thing going on with me today? Gross over sales. Operating would be operating income over sales. And then net would be net income over sales. These are the margins. These are called profitability ratios. In other words, gross margin. How much of the every dollar that you pull in survive what you paid in wholesale prices? Again, how much of every dollar did you pulled in survive down past what you paid the wholesalers? Operating. After you've paid not just your wholesale, but also for the lights and the employees and the mail and all that, the stuff like that, meals and entertainment, depreciation, which isn't a real expense anyway. How much of your sales dollar survived that little round? Now, one nice thing is from year to year, you kind of compare this, the operating margin. You do that over a period of years and you look at it. Is that operating margin improving, declining, staying stable? And that tells you about what kind of cost control they're going through. Like if operating margin is getting better from year to year, well, that would probably tell me that the company is trying to execute cost controls to, you know, so that they don't have as many dollars being spent down there in the sales, general, and administrative expenses. Net sales, net margin. That's how much sale, every dollar sale, got to the bottom line for the shareholders. Now remember, that money could go to the shareholders as dividends, or it could go to the shareholders as reinvestment in the company by the executives and the board. Here's the thing, interestingly enough. As I said, there is no holy number on any of these, except maybe for times interest earned can't be below 1x. But you will have some kinds of businesses where the net margin, if for a lot of the businesses, is like 30, 40%. Hell, I've even seen a few businesses where the net margin was 80%. In other words, their markups were so ridiculous that 80 cents survived to the bottom line for every dollar of sales. But then you have some companies that have net margins that are 1% or less. And those companies are just fine. Can you think of a company that would have an incredibly small net margin? A what? Fashion company? No, fastener. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It could have a tight margin. Go. Interestingly, it could have a very, as a matter of fact, I would love to have the time to show you that one. It is. It does have a rather pathetic net margin, but that isn't bad. Can you think of anything else? Go. Strangely enough, it's all dependent. But in general, if you're talking about the company versus the franchises, you might see a different story. But in general, yeah. Anything else? The huge oil companies would be another. Now, in every case, you're describing companies that are huge. And you see, what goes on with a company like this is that the scale of operations is so enormous that you have hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in sales, but a 1% return on that means that you still have a massive amount of money ending up at the shareholder line, the net income line. Think about this. One of my favorite stories is some of the love children of Wall Street are companies that, you know, if you don't think about it, you say, ew, why? Aldi's, why would Aldi's be so popular? Why would a Dollar Tree store be popular on Wall Street or with investors? Well, personally, I love Dollar Tree. At Christmas time, $10, 10 gifts. How can you beat that? But think about something like a, let's do a speculative, not, I won't do Dollar Tree even though I know the numbers, but I'll do one. You've got $1, one of these dollar stores. Okay, you might sell, let's say, 60 items in a day. That is pathetic. That's $60? Yeah. Well, your employees there, if you pay them as low as you can and get some deductions, net might be, and you're not going to give them any employee benefits unless they are under the Affordable Care Act, they're probably going to run you about $20, $30, $40. Okay, we're hurting right there. Okay, now the lease on the store and per day, lease on the store and the lights per day might run. You're going to put it in a crappy part of town. You're going to keep cheapo lighting on. You might have $15 a day. Ouch! You're down to $5 that would be available to the shareholders after the expenses on that stupid little store. Okay, you got 5,000 of those stores. 5,000 times $5 is 25,000. 25,000 times 365 days, suddenly you've got a multi-million dollar business. Scale of operations. The net margin can be small, pathetic, but if you've scaled it up to a huge enough extent, you can live with small margins on your stuff. This was one of the great geniuses of some of the early great rich business people, especially in this country. Don't go for the long bomb with some highly expensive product that you might sell one or two of. Make tiny, cheap stuff, little candies, little toys, little screws. Just keep making them, but you'll make hardly anything off each individual. A penny maybe, 2 pennies. But you scale that to 1 billion of those being sold every month, you have got yourself an insanely profitable business on the scale. That's the trick. So net margin of 1% doesn't tell me right off the bat that the company sucks. I just have to say, all right, what kind of company is this? What are the industry averages? What do the best companies in this industry have for the ratios? So always keep that in mind. Numbers tell you something, but you also have to think your way past the numbers. And the other thing, too, is a bigger lesson for business in general is don't dream of these huge margins on each one of the products you sell. If you can do enough business, you can have a thin net margin on each item and still live very comfortably. Many of the great American businesses, industries, like barbershops, dry cleaners, all of those were based upon very small net margins, but on substantial volume of business that they did. So that's more the American dream than the stuff that you hear these days about geniuses of business like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Donald Trump and all that kind of stuff. Look to the small. Small net margin isn't a bad idea. Okay. Let me move on here. And I'm not going to go through all of these ratios. By the way, if you want the ratios, and make sure you have these open if you're going to do a quiz or a test, it's saying it's 80 and 81. But like I said, I've got a handy little sheet. I think I've got it up on ReggieNet, and I'll try to put it up on Pearson as well, just for something to walk around with so that if you're at a party, you can just pull this sheet out, and people will say, oh, my God, you are so cool. You have financial ratios in your pocket.
That's not all. I have a wallet.
filthy-minded people. Okay.
The book calls these a different name, but you'll recognize them right off the bat from the book. We call these leverage or cap ratios. Leverage or structure ratios. Now, when I use the word capital structure, generally speaking, what I am talking about is a company's balance of debt and equity. Remember, the debt plus the equity equals the total assets. What is the balance of those? That's what I mean by capital structure. Now, you'll see some companies with a capital structure that is very light on debt, hell, even down to 0% in some cases, maybe 20% debt, 80% equity. And then you'll see some that are on the other side that are almost all debt, especially those high-risk, high-leveraged buyouts, LBOs. But that's what I mean by capital structure, okay? Now, there are two different ratios you can use. There's the debt-equity ratio, which is your debt over your equity. Now, the problem, though, is, you see over there, there are two kinds of equity. There's book equity and there's market equity. Book equity is just total shareholders' equity line. Market equity is the market cap. Generally speaking, the book, when it says equity, it's referring to the book equity. Technically, that doesn't really mean a lot, but, you know, there you go. Okay, and then there's the debt to total assets ratio, which is the debt portion over the total assets. They're basically measuring the same thing, and different people prefer one or the other. The debt-asset ratio I kind of like a little better because it just tells you the percent of debt in the capital structure. So if you tell me that the debt-to-total assets is 20%, I know right off the bat that there is 20% debt, 80% equity. If you say the debt-to-equity ratio, I have to calculate in my mind a little bit more. 50% debt, 50% equity would be a debt-equity ratio of 1. But debt-to-assets sort of gives a more of a real-world feeling to it. There are some other leverage ratios, too. Remember that it doesn't hurt for you to check the debt to the market equity as well, because the market equity is telling us what the market really thinks of this right now. Without going through all of these painful ratios one after the other, let me show you something that the book and some of your quizzes they're going to try to flub you with. Okay, let's say net margin is, oh, let's say, 15%. Book equity is, unknown, but they have sales of 5 million. Then they ask you some random question like out of nowhere. Always, and I'm not going to get too specific here because when you see any question that starts with a ratio and some number and then ask something random, the first thing you do is say, oh, I know net margin is net income over sales, which means that if I took net income over sales, in other words, net margin, times sales, I would get net income. That's the trick that they're trying to do to you every time. They're looking for you to know how to just algebraically play and get something to cancel so that you pull back a number that they don't tell you. So in this case, I could say, oh, well, in this case, net income over sales, I was just told that was 15%. I was told that sales is $5 million. I can do it. I was stuck there for a second. I know. I just stop sometimes. Please help me if you see me stay quiet for too long. Is it right? 750? Okay, there's 750,000. So we have just recovered net income. Now, suppose that they said, well, the book ROE is 20%. Find that. And again, I don't want to get too specific. What I want you to do is see the general trick. Oh, well, return on equity, that is net income over book equity. They're saying that's 0.20. Net income, we just found out, was 750,000 over book equity. So now I can just do an algebra thing. 0.20 equals 750,000 over book equity. And just cross multiply this thing. And for the love of God, 750 times 5. I'm so bad at arithmetic, I'm not even going to try to do this on my own. Okay, 750,000 times 5. If I cross multiply, I find out that book equity is 750,000 over 0.20, which comes out to be $3,750,000. That's how they're doing this. They're just trying to get you to play with the ratio until you get what you want out of it. You just keep twisting it around until it squawks at you. I think this kind of mirrors one of the questions on the quiz, doesn't it? Kind of. That's all they're doing. It's like, what are they asking? How do I find this? And it's not anything to do with finance. This is just algebra. This is just, you know, like 10th grade, 11th grade algebra is all they're trying to get you to do. It really doesn't teach you anything about finance, for God's sake. But it's so popular, and I've run into it in every book I've ever used. So you just kind of live through it. By the way, I opened that quiz 2 up for 3 attempts instead of 2. Because that was probably one of the harder ones that you've encountered so far. So I opened that one up for 3 attempts on the quiz. Might even open up the test on that one for 3 too. Just so you can get used to how this play works, okay? Let's say current ratio equals 2.5 times. Ouch. Total assets are 10 million and book equity is, let's say, 6 million. Long-term debt, long-term liabilities are 4 million. I want you to just play with it. I'm just throwing some numbers out. I hope to God they work. Just right off the top of your head. Just start getting kind of used to the play. What do you see? Can you tell me what the current liabilities of the company are? Let me make this one a little easier for you. Can you tell me what the current liabilities of the company are? Anyone? Let's see. Okay, for this one, I'd say, well, total assets equal total liabilities plus equity, book equity. Well, I got the total assets are 12. Total liabilities are short liabilities, short-term liabilities, plus long-term liabilities, plus owner's equity, plus book equity. So you got your, we don't know this one, but we do know the long-term liabilities are $4 million. We know that the book equity is $6 million. So, to get to $12 million from $10 million, how much would the shorts have to be? Two. You see what they're doing? They're just trying to get you to put together puzzles. Know the formulas, and then put together the puzzle. That means that the short-term liabilities are $2 million. Okay, now. You got that one. Now let's go to another one. Okay, can you tell me what the current assets are? We know the current liabilities. We know the current long-term liabilities. We know the assets. Is there a way to find the current liabilities with the information we have up there? Talk to me. You see it? You got it? Do you see it? What is the current ratio? Do you know that one yet? Yeah, current assets divided by current liabilities. We don't know the current assets, but we do know the current liabilities are $2 million. And we know that that ratio is 2.5 times. What are the current assets? Hell, I don't know. $2 million on both sides of that. Current assets are $5 million. That's what this is about. That's what those bizarre problems are about. It's just like putting together a puzzle. Just keep hammering at it. Look for something where you have a final number, and on the other side you have just one unknown. And there are so many of these, I can't show you every possible variation because I could pull them out of, you know, inventory turnover ratio, cash ratio, quick ratio, current ratio. But the whole trick is to just simply, in this case, I knew that the current ratio was 2.5. I know what current liabilities are. Well, I know that current assets over current liabilities is the current ratio. So I know that 2.5 is current assets over $2 million. Do you know how to do that yet? Probably not. You're going to struggle real hard with it. Just in some cases, you're just going to say, well, FI. Or something like that. But you just keep playing with it. That's why you have all the time in the world to beat these out. You might finally give up on some of them, but let me try another one. Just to show you the logic that we use to get to these. The company plowed back into operations. $8 million on $10 million net. The dividend yield is 2.2% on, well, let's say 500,000 shares. I'm trying to throw it, I'll probably throw it together, it's so complicated I can't do it here. But I'm just trying to show you, not this is how you do it, this is how you think about doing it. What's the market price? Of the stock. Again, I threw this one together fast enough that I didn't see the path myself to get to the answer. But that way I can show you how I would attack it. What the hell do I do now? Well, okay, I see my path. I hope I see my path. Talk to me. What would be the first thing that you would want to calculate? It's almost obvious there. What would your gut tell you? It's just almost screaming at you, know this number. You got it? No. How about the dividend? How much dividend? Somewhere down there, they talk about the dividend yield, so I might want to know the dividend. Okay, because the company made $10 million, net $10 million minus dividend is your plowback. How much they paid out in dividend takes away from what they have to plow back. So in this case, whoops. No, I'm asking that. Okay, plowback is, what did I say? 8 million. 10 million minus 8 million, there it is. My dividend is $2 million. Dividend is $2 million. Why would I care about the dividend? Why is that the first thing I went for the jugular? Why? Go. Can you tell me what the dividend yield formula is? I mean, haven't you memorized it yet? Well, as a formula, it's... What's the dividend yield as a formula? Not what? Not profit. Dividend yield. Don't worry, that's the point. That's the point. You just have to have that, those ratios where you can see them. I said dividend yield. That dividend yield is dividend over price, well, over market cap. Well, fortunately, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to get dividend per share. Now, if this is fogging you, trust me, you're not alone.
dividend per share would be $2 million divided by 500,000 shares. So each share of stock got a dividend of $4. So, finally, this one was a little too much like work. I can use this formula for the dividend yield, and this is the one that you'll want to use. Is the dividend per share over the price per share of the stock? Write that one down. In other words, how much did each share get as a dividend? That's the way they usually list it on the services. Remember that from Monday? They say the dividend per share divided by the price per share. Okay. Well, they told us the dividend yield was 2%, 2.2%. The dividend per share is $4. Well, I'll be darned. Wow. That one's about as bad as it can get. If you get that one already, you're way ahead of the game. Can you tell me what the price of the stock is? $181.82. Yeah. It was something like that. I knew it was close to 200. That's a nasty. See how many steps that I had to go through. But the guiding thing that I was using for a question like that was, okay, they are asking for a market price. What formula has a market price in it? Then I look down, and if you look down, that narrows the field a lot. Price-to-earnings ratio has a market price in it, and the dividend yield has the market price in it. Okay. Well, earnings, they didn't give me anything. But wait a minute. They told me the dividend yield, so it must be that formula I need to be aiming at. Okay. If I were to start attacking this problem, just going after this problem, first thing I do is, okay, they've told me that I need a market price. I need a market price. The two formulas that have market price in them are the price to earnings ratio, which is price per share over earnings per share, the other one I have is the dividend yield. Which is the dividend per share over the price per share. Okay, that's important because nowhere in this problem did they mention price to earnings ratio. So that one's got to be off the table. But they did say the dividend yield. So I must need the dividend yield. I need to use this formula. Well, okay, I know 0.022. I know the dividend yield calculation. Dividend per share, and this is the goal, the price per share of the stock. So that means that that's the one I don't know, so I've got to be able to find this one somewhere. I can't not know two things or three things. Well, I know the dividend yield. I need to find the price per share, so this thing right here must be hiding. It has to be there somewhere. Okay, the dividend per share. Well, okay. Well, the company made $10 million for the shareholders and it put $8 million back in. That means it had to have $2 million that it paid out as a dividend. Ah, that's why I did this here, is because that tells me the dividend. Because I know that
Your net income minus what you give to the shareholders is what you plow back. Okay. Got the dividend, but they want the dividend per share. That formula needs the dividend per share. Well, that's easy because I have the stock price, or I have the number of shares outstanding right there, so I can quickly get the dividend per share, and that's how I got to my answer. Again, first things first is look at what you've got and look at the formula. Okay, I've got dividend yield, 0.022. That formula is that right there. Okay, what don't I know, and what can I get? That's how every one of those problems works. And some of them you're going to go five times around a barn to get to the outhouse. Literally, when I did this when I was your age, there were times when I went down like three or four pathways, and and by the time the professor said, time's up, you know, I was ready to make his time up. He was old anyway. That's why I give you have unlimited time to do this. You'll probably get tired after a while and have to take a crap or something. But don't get discouraged. Just keep working it, plowing in different directions until you get to the answer. If some of you have done math, like calculus math, you know sometimes, or those proofs that you had to do sometime in your past, sometimes you'll just go down one path and another, and after a while you say, and sometimes at the beginning of these, they give you ratios and things, and the first thing that you're going to, the first question that you're going to ask is, because, you know, there's just, how am I supposed to find it? Honestly, I know that's going to happen. That's why I give you infinite amount of time to do the quiz and the test, because you just have to find something that you know and how that is put together as far as a formula, and then find something in the formula that you know to get to what you don't know. That's the whole trick in all of those. A couple of last things on this. If you aren't already beaten up and wondering why you even came to class today, let me show you something else. Get it a little bit less. I mean, this is about as tedious as this course gets. I promise you right now, this is as tedious as it gets. Well, there's one other place that's kind of tedious too, but it doesn't get much worse than this as far as math goes. But I do want to take you back to something a little more real here. Have you ever ridden a bicycle? Did you learn how to do it reading a book? You actually went out there and you fell down, broke some teeth or something, or ran into the neighbor's dog or something. You did the thing. And if there's anything that I like about ratio analysis is actually doing the real world version of it. If we can ever actually, there's some reason this sucks. Yeah, there we go. Okay, now I'm gonna pull up. And it's your call. Give me a company that's of interest right now. Just tell me a company.
Alibaba.
What?
Alibaba.
That's a foreign company.
Oh, they're in Europe.
Yeah, but I think, don't they still have ADRs? Okay, foreign companies, when they have operations as stock in the United States, it's not actually common stock in the traditional sense. It's called an ADR. That sort of mimics stock. I don't know if Alibaba has. Maybe it does. I don't know. But does it list it as an ADR or as a common stock? Well, I'll find out. Here real fast. Seriously? Oh, there. Alibaba. Service. Is that actually a company? What is it? BABA. BABA. Well, I'll be... No. Those are numbers that you don't recognize. See those? If you don't see 10Q, 10K, 8K, then you're in a foreign country, okay? Okay, here's something I learned. Traveling around the world, you go on the menu. If you see dog, you're in another country. Okay? Just try something else. What else? Anything of interest right now out there?
Snapchat.
Snapchat? Yeah. Oh, maybe we'll find Jared on it. Too soon? Yes, too soon. Nope. I so wish that was on there. Their 10K would be really interesting. For God's sake. What is? Say it. I didn't catch it. Someone say something?
Netflix.
Okay, yeah, NFLX. We'll just bore ourselves with Netflix. I've seen every horror movie on there. There's nothing left. I actually watched Bounty Killer last night. It was actually a great movie. The Babadook was really good. That was indie. That was actual indie. And the kid was so annoying. I wanted to beat the crap out of the kid. He was that good as an actor. Okay, here we go. No, and the woman started out real meek and mild, and then she turned into Jack Nicholson halfway through the movie when she finally got sick of the kid. I was like, yeah, lady, you go. Okay, let's quit. Okay, here we go. Okay, let's look at something interesting here. Real quick here, I'm going to do a fast two-step of calculations. Look at the ROE. Let's just look at return on equity, the book ROE here. For 2 years running. Now, one of the nasty things is the ratios where you have to switch between the income statement and the balance sheet. Well, we're going to do, let me just do it here real quick. We've got the net income for 2000 for the previous fiscal year. Net income was 112,403. 112,403 divided by, now I got to flop over to the balance sheet here real quick to get the book equity. And I'm doing this so you can see actually where the numbers are. Book equity, seriously, there it is. 1333. Seriously, I can so not see that. 561. ROE for 2013, if I did that right, book ROE. 2013 was 8.43%. Now, I always rounded two decimal places. That was the house rule. If you ever actually have to do calculations like this in a real business, find out what their house rule is. Some things say one decimal place. Some say four decimal places. So there's kind of going to be like a standard in your company. Two is where I am, but know that every company kind of has its own. Now, doing it again here for 2014. For 2014, net income was $266,799 divided by, and then flipping back over to the balance sheet for the equity, $1,857,708. Whoa! There you go. What do you see? It's not quite a doubling, but that's almost return on equity, book return on equity, kind of like practically doubled. That's a good sign. But there is a dark side to that sign, especially when you get to return on assets. Because, you know, with ROA, you've got your net income divided by your total assets, right? I'm going to tell you a story here. As your net income expands, if you keep your total assets expanding at a lower rate, your ROA will, by mathematics, go up. Again, if your net income is going up, but your return on, but your assets are not going up as fast, your net income divided by your total assets will increase year over year. That sounds like a good thing, and it's something that companies will do. There's a problem with that, you see. It's, if you see ROA going up year over year over year, I would be a little bit suspicious. My question would be, is this because net income is growing a little bit, but total assets aren't growing? Or is this because net income is really growing, and total assets are growing too, but not quite at the same rate? Here's the background story on that. For years and years, it's been decades, oil refineries didn't change. The same ones have been in service since the 60s and 70s around the United States, especially down in the Gulf Coast area in Texas. Those oil refineries are the same ones that have been there for years and years and years. Well, of course, net income for oil companies has skyrocketed over the years, but they never did anything to maintain or improve or build new refinery capability. So, two things were happening. The total asset base was not growing through refinery building, and net income was kind of, the depreciation was still there, but it was kind of easing off. But net income was growing very strongly. Total assets were not growing hardly at all. So now we come to the 21st century, over the past 10 years. One refinery explosion after another, after another, after another. Deaths of workers, destruction of oil refining capacity, environmental suckitude. Yes, that's a word. You're talking about what they were doing was they were, and we, this is the term we use, they were cannibalizing their assets. This idea, well, we'll save money. We'll save money here. We'll save money there. We'll save money on building new plant and equipment. We'll save money on employee training. We'll save money everywhere. Well, sooner or later, that comes back to bite you because your ROA, yeah, these numbers that I'm teaching you now, they're doing better and better every year. Yeah, we cut our employee training. Yep, that'll help our expenses. We cut our development of new technologies. Yep, that'll save our expenses. We don't really need to build a new plant right now or a retailer. We really don't need to make our stores all that modern. People still love 1950s stores to go into to buy their clothes. Hell, we still got the same clothes we had in the 1950s in those stores. In all of those cases, that penny-wise attitude led to the pound foolishness of disaster. With the oil refinery issue, with JCPenney and Sears, there was condemnation. Can you think of a retailer? Over the past 3 years, they revamped every store in the nation and turned part of the store into a grocery store. Can you think of one of those, a store chain that probably almost all of you go to? You can't think of one? The stores look different from what they did 4 years ago? Target. It's not Target, it's Target. I mean, we're upscale around this damn place. They were condemned. Oh, you're spending money. It's a waste. Well, who is their demographic? I'll show you. It's, well, you're sitting on it. It's your ass. Their demographic is you guys. If they get old and tired, the same store, that same stupid-ass dog with that fake circle around its eye, you're going to lose interest, and someone else is going to penetrate the market and pull you away. Schnucks was trying to pull you away over the last year. They were putting little microwaves in their store, little refrigerators in their Schnucks stores to try to tease you away. Target saw those kinds of little minor competitors as a threat. So they spent a ton of money, blew their net income to hell. Total assets went up, so return on assets went down. Net income going down blasted the crap out of their return on equity. So you had the idiot financial analyst saying, well, Target's on its last leg. Look at these ratios dying. No, what they were doing was they were going through a consolidation period. They were actually going through a consolidation period. You're ready to go out to a very, very good club in Manhattan. Okay? You spent the day doing landscape work and painting and working in the sewers. You jump right out of sewer hole number 533 in Brooklyn and run to the club. No. You spend some time getting yourself cleaned up. You're going to lose momentum because coming out of that sewer, you were ready to go. Man, I've been smelling that stuff all day. I'm ready for action and a martini. But if you slow down, straighten your act up, clean up, who knows? You might walk into that club, and there she is, swinging on a wrecking ball. Miley Cyrus says, join me. That's all I have for you. Go home.